to the Sound of Football, and what can we give you this week? Because we weren't here last week, so we thought, well, we've really got to come back with a bang, haven't we? So this week we're going to bring you sex, drugs, and rock and roll. Well, yeah, maybe not so much sex. Plenty of drugs, and well, you know, the rock and roll will be brought to you by my two guests, as always. It's Terry DeFellin and Ian Bilton. Evening, chaps. How are you?
Yeah, very, very good. Thanks. I'm a bit disappointed and taken aback that I had to pee in a cup before I could record this podcast, but there it is.
At least I didn't ask you for blood.
No.
Which is, incidentally, neither does UEFA.
No. So we're in good company.
Yeah, which does seem to be a bit of the problem. I mean, it is very odd. I mean, I think it's quite surprising, isn't it? When you know, drug taking seems to be so sophisticated now, drug enhancement, should I say. And yet, UEFA is still going with what seems to be quite an archaic, simplistic route.
Yeah, the urine sample.
Yes.
Which can be, well, I say not easily, but it can be masked. But drugs which can be detected from urine samples can be masked. Mm. And for many years now, other sports, professional sports, have been testing athletes' blood. And that doesn't happen in football, which is peculiar.
Why do you think that, Jan, that hasn't happened? What do you think the mindset is behind it? Do you think they don't want to catch cheats?
There's probably a bit of that about it, isn't there?
Yeah.
I mean, it would bring down the whole house of cards, a lot of money riding on it.
Mm.
I don't know whether that's actually the reason for it. You know, there are a lot of people in positions of power that are quite conservative in their outlook and don't like to change things so quickly. But there is probably a bit of they're worried about the money.
Do you think there's an element of denial? Do you think that they think, well, you know, footballers don't, you know, doping in football is not widespread? How they know this, I don't know, because they don't test people's blood, so I don't know how they can know that. But maybe there is an element of, well, I call it denial, because to say it's denial is to assume or presume that doping is widespread in football.
Yeah.
But I mean, you know, maybe they just feel that, you know, it doesn't happen here, so, you know,
it does.
There's no need for it.
Basically, yeah. They're plucking that idea out of the air, though, aren't they?
It does.
There's no fact behind it. They're just going, it doesn't happen in football.
Well, they can't possibly know that it doesn't happen because they don't do the proper thorough test. They do, yeah. I mean, they do drug tests from urine, which is okay. But yeah, I mean, these days it's a bit 1990s, isn't it?
It is a bit. I mean, it's a bit sort of like Eastern German sprinters getting away with it, isn't it? Really, go behind the curtain and fill up this cup, please. Yes, madam.
And they fill it up with some dog's urine. Something
like that.
Yeah, we've got a shiwi right here.
Yeah, thanks very much. Thanks. Well, your urine passed, but I'm afraid you've got distemper.
And you appear to be a bloke. Yes, anyway. I mean, if Larry Armstrong and his operation could get away with drug cheating for so many years, it is perhaps naive to think that it can't be done in other realms, and there aren't other, particularly given the vast resources that footballers and football clubs command. I mean,
certainly.
They should not easily, but they should be able to, if they wanted to, set up a system whereby they could get away with it, and I'm sure they've got lawyers just like Larry had lawyers, and create a wall of silence. And without blood testing, it's incredibly easy to get away with it.
Yeah, I mean, whose interest would it be to actually expose this? Because the press wouldn't want to do it because it sells their newspapers, the constant, you know, the football stories and all the money that goes with it and the shenanigans and the almost soap-like lives of the players and managers, so they're not interested in exposing anything. The clubs obviously wouldn't be.
Well, no.
The players wouldn't be either.
And the players obviously wouldn't be either.
So,
no.
Yeah, I mean, it could well be a war.
What's curious is that there hasn't been anyone who's broken ranks after they've retired. If it is widespread,
yeah.
Then why hasn't anybody broker ranks later after they retire.
I have a theory about it, and I think you've got to look at the Lance Armstrong whole episode and look at how much money he made from court action.
Mm.
And he went vociferously after everyone.
Yes.
And then this is the real thing that's happening now that he's come out and
yes, because they're now going to go after him.
Because they're now coming after him. And the Sunday Times do have their knives out, and quite rightly so.
So they should.
He basically ruined careers there with what he was doing.
Mm.
And you know these people now are going straight for the throat. Will that mean it's open season on any drugs cheat once they're caught?
Mm.
It's very interesting. There was last week there was an announcement in the Australian media. It did actually reach certain elements of the British media as well. That there was a huge government crackdown about to start on drugs cheats in Australian sport, and this was across the board.
They say across the board, although A-League and cricket. Deny that they are being investigated.
Mm.
And so soccer and cricket, I think, deny they're being investigated. It's rugby league and possibly Australian rules. Rugby union, football and cricket insist their bodies insist that they're not being investigated.
Really? Rugby union as well, are they?
That they're not being investigated. But okay. It would appear to be the latest that it's rugby league and Australian rules football, AFL. So, I mean, big business, big top level professional sports in Australia, and a really big deal. And if you like, the first country to, after the US anti-doping authority, to really break out with a big investigation like this, and apparently, very widespread. And I'm sure that it's our man Gary Andrews is currently in Australia, and he says that it's all over the Australian media. It's possible that as these instances and these stories come out, then it'll become easier to then get to the bottom of just how widespread doping in sport is, and I guess from our point of view, how widespread doping in football is.
Mm. It's interesting, I think, is that the fact that a lot of the focus has been on cycling, obviously, over the last 12 months and even longer. But it's come along at a time when cycling is on the upsurge over here.
In the UK.
And the fact that UK cycling is a clean sport. Cycling itself is a clean sport because there's so much testing on it now.
Yeah, it better be, otherwise there'll be trouble.
There will be trouble. but as well, what you've got now is that there is an underlying media message how can cycling actually recover from all this negative news? How can we trust anyone who gets on a bike? Is that balanced by the fact that we've got a very, very, very successful group of cyclists at the moment? Or would you say in Spain at the moment, cycling is probably at its lowest ebb?
Well, in Spain and in Italy and indeed in France, they're quite used to doping. Mm. Doping stories have been around for at least a decade. And what tends to happen is the cyclist gets done for doping, they serve their ban, they just get back on their bike, and that's fine. And the popularity of the sport doesn't seem to wane that much. Mm. In Germany, it's different. The German broadcasters banned Tour de France and refused to cover it.
Really?
Yeah. In the UK, it's a slightly different scenario because we are, although there are a small number of hardcore cycling fans down the years, it's just coming to the fore now because of Bradley Wiggins, because of Team Sky, and because they say that they are clean. If it transpired that they weren't clean, then that would probably kill the sport in the UK just as it's getting on its feet.
Yeah.
Because no one would be able to accept it. Whereas in France, Spain, Italy, it's been around for decades. Mm. It's very popular. And I suspect, and as a consequence, they kind of forgive the riders a bit more. They just accept it as part of it. And I wonder whether or not that is something that might happen were it to be to transpire that there was as much doping going on in English football as there is in European cycling.
Yeah.
Because I think that ultimately we're so tribal that we'd probably to an extent shrug it off. All we'd actually end up doing is just pointing the finger at other players and perhaps turning our back and maybe just like forgiving our own and saying, oh, well, they're doing it so because they're doing it. And he's doing it, so we can do it. And it will just turn into that. And then that's how the narrative will go, which is not terribly edifying, but it will be a good way of getting around what could be a wrong situation.
On who is kind of outed first. If it's a kind of a run-of-the-mill player that's just, you know, a jobbing footballer in the Premier League, then it's fine. But if it's one of the big boys, it's a major name, then I think that will send a shockwave.
This is on the assumption that there's doping taking place in England, and there's no evidence, of course, to say that there is, so we shouldn't just assume that there is. But, yes, you're right. And you do imagine, if you're thinking of playing out a scenario in your mind, then you would think that perhaps it would probably be, if anything, it might be a championship player, journeyman championship player who gets busted first.
But do you think it's going to be more likely to be individuals rather than clubs?
That's a good question. I mean, I suppose that very much depends on how it works. If it is decided to investigate, if the authorities here say, look, we're going to investigate football, so we're going to get the law involved, and we're going to do this, and it may well be that it'll be a club. If it's a question of a whistleblower, then it'll be an individual. Depends how it goes. I would imagine. I don't think there's an appetite to investigate drugs in England,
but
and in Europe.
No, I think the way it will go is like it's gone in Spain at the moment, where they've got their own Dr. Nick, this Fuentes.
This Fuentes fella who's helped out quite a lot of cyclists with their blood transfusion needs.
Yeah, apparently the Fuentes trial in Spain at the moment is only focusing on the cycling isn't it?
Yeah.
But that makes up about a quarter of his clients.
Yeah,
I think so. Yeah. And the
word coming out from there is that in fact that there are considerably larger fish out there in the pan, but the investigation is solely concerned with cycling, so they're compartmentalising all the other stuff. And it is said that there are blood bags with football players' names on them that are tested positive. So we don't know who those are, and it's probably it would be advisable never to speculate on as to who they are. But Graham, you were telling me the other day that Arsene Wenger had said once that, you know, some of the players that he'd signed when they'd had a look at their blood.
Yeah. He's
been concerned.
Yeah, I mean, he came out last week and was calling for blood tests to be put in place, and he mentioned back, I think it was 2005, that he had signed players with worrying blood levels were his exact words. I think that there was more sort of like a sort of fear, like to sort of like try and put down, say, look, why aren't these things being investigated more? I personally think it's naive to think that there is that football's clean, and I think it has to be, considering the amount of money that's going around there, the amount of money individual footballers have. If you could take something with minimal chance of getting caught that was meant that your next contract was going to be twice as much as what you're on at the moment. Yeah, it would be far too tempting. And I don't think footballers are clever enough to say no.
I think that there is also a question of culture. Players, when they're young, if they trust their coaches, they trust their managers, they trust their doctors to look after them and keep them well, they may not even, in some instances, realise they're doing. It's like the young that young Pakistani cricketer who got done for spot fixing. Really just doing as his captain was told, what his captain was telling him, and was really too young, arguably too young to realise that, you know, what the full extent of what he was doing. And that perhaps there is that. I mean, it happens in baseball, it happens in cycling. These are highly advanced, highly professionalised sports, just like football is.
I think it's
naive to suggest. It's naive to dismiss it. I'm not suggesting that it is happening, but I think it's naive to just think that it's not. Yeah. I think that it there certainly should be blood testing.
Well, I think any sport where that is based, especially the British game, where it's based on speed, strength, and endurance, the three things that drug cheats have been using drugs.
And with all this Fergie time there is nowadays, you know, players are playing for what, 96, 97 minutes in the game.
They need as much endurance as they can get.
They need the extra. Yeah, anyway, let's not get.
Yeah, we could have mentioned any manager's name time there.
Yes, Fergie time being an expression for injury time and not an inference at all.
Just to throw this out there,
yeah.
Does it really matter?
Because, it's worth throwing out.
Because if you look at the history of any sport, the players or participants have got better and better and better because of nutrition and differing coaching styles and techniques and so on and so forth. So, you know, a lot of sports have evolved because of those things. You know, is it any different to a runner taking an amount of caffeine before they go running because they know that there's a small advantage in doing that? And I don't think that's a banned substance. And I know that we were talking about earlier that footballers have been heard about taking that. And caffeine's caffeine's all right. I mean, I know it's not the same as some
there is a problem with it where most physical enhancing drugs are going to make your body operate at a level, at a maximal level that it shouldn't really operate at for any extended period of time.
Yeah, but what if there was a technique of training your muscles that would deliver that naturally, but would you make that illegal?
Well, I think there hasn't. Well, I think what you'd need is, if you're going to make it legal, then all the drugs that have to use have to go through clinical trials, and there would have to be measurable improvements, and then also as well, whatever you took would also have to be safe, and so that would take years for it to prove. Because I mean, at the moment, dodgy drugs can come out, mm-hmm. and they can be used. I mean, like, a lot of drugs are used in medicine anyway, but they're for fixing sick people. They're not for giving to healthy people.
Is it any different to taking a massive, to taking Barocca or something like that?
Well, Barocca, I would strongly suggest not to take, because it's full of loads of stuff that just sends you a bit loopy.
You see what I mean? I know, but
I mean, I don't even like taking Red Bull, because it's a bit too maddening.
But I mean, certain things can give you a lift or wings, as they say. And it's not necessarily my belief, but is it the fact that just sport's evolving, so therefore we've reached the limits of what the human body can do, so therefore it's like human plus one.
I think there's an argument out there. There are people out there who probably share that view. I mean, I guess all I would say is, I think in sport you're looking at a level playing field. So you're looking to avoid an unfair advantage. So if that was the case, it was okay to use performance-enhancing drugs, then they should really be available to all, and that isn't really what happens. And of course, perhaps more importantly, the social and the health and welfare aspects of taking these drugs. Mm. Professional sportsmen who habitually take performance-enhancing drugs are said to be not too different to people who take recreational drugs habitually. You know, they can be addictive, they can have side effects, mental side effects, as well as physical ones, and they have those dangers, and as Grant says, they're not clinically tried, so we don't know about the extent of the side effects that are there. Mm. You know, there is one high profile case of an Italian cyclist who was a profound dope fiend, and committed suicide, and it's very difficult to imagine whether or not, you know, his habit and his problem contributed in some way to his mental health. Mm. So, you know, I mean, there's the social dimension to it, which I don't think can be ignored, and I mean, that's why I think that it definitely, by all means, regulate it. But yeah, everything's got to be legal, and it's got to be tested, and then it's got to be available to everybody. And that isn't really, well, in football we don't know whether it's happening at all. But certainly in other sports, that's not really what's happening. Yeah. I mean, you don't want to be sat in a flea-ridden hotel room, you know, or lying on a bed with a drip and a bag of blood and one and your blood coursing out of one side into another bag while you've got another bag of blood coming in there. That's not a cool situation to find yourself.
It's hardly what sport's about, though, is it?
No.
Really? And that's the thing, isn't it? I mean, I think that's it. I mean, like, you know, you can say probably it's a dated attitude, but, you know, isn't it about being healthy and
virtuous?
And showing off what a human can do rather than what a human on drugs can do.
Hey, you know, for all we know, we're the ones being overly cynical, and football is for the most part clean.
Mm-hmm.
So you know, we're only speculating. I think it's fair to say that, you know, the best way to find it out would be for UEFA to start testing players' blood. And then we'll have a much better idea of the extent of a problem.
Yeah. It's clean, there's nothing to worry about.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm. Well, yeah, it's all grist in the mill, isn't it? You were going on about, Terry, earlier about the spot fixing in cricket. And that's another thing that came up. Another negative thing that came up in the news was match fixing. Did you hear much about this, Jan? The match fixing, there was a case a few years ago that the fact that one of Liverpool's Champions League games was called into question.
Against Debrecen, Hungarian champions, a Champions League group stage a few years ago. Yes, it should be stressed, and it can't be stressed highly enough, that Liverpool Football Club were not in any way involved in this.
No,
that has been.
But it was a couple of matches involving Debrecen, wasn't it?
Yeah, that's right.
I mean, the amount of money that's flying around on these things, I would assume that it does happen. It never seems to go for Sunderland, though.
Cricket, I think it's more like you're betting on events within games rather than necessarily results, aren't you?
Yeah.
So floodlight failures and number of corners and, you know, that kind of stuff that Ray Winston goes on about in those adverts. You know, but you never see that though in the next live odds. Yeah. Yeah. Next live odds coming your way. Floodlight failure, 72 minutes. Yeah.
Yeah. Have a bang on that.
Have a bang on that. Yeah.
Yeah, well, maybe you should. You know, there goes.
Like, why not?
Yeah. How many pies are going to get sold at half time?
Yeah. Well, it all comes back to this chap here based in Singapore called Dan Tan, who apparently I assume that's not his real name, and he's the guy. He's a guy behind this massive betting syndicate in the Far East that is the root of it all. I don't know whether or not. How truthful that is, or whether or not there's a degree of demonising people because they're from the Far East and, you know, mysterious and into that sort of thing. But it does seem very clear that from Europol's report that what we heard about it was that, yeah, that was what they just uncovered was scratching the surface. But then 24 hours later, they ceremoniously went, well, we're not actually investigating any of it, though. Which is really weird. And again, I mean, I think it goes back to, you know, any possibility of doping is that there just isn't any appetite to uncover the truth. I mean, maybe it would be helpful to try and imagine what football would be like if match fixing was proven and uncovered and exposed to a large level. How damaging do you think it would be?
Well, it was a while ago, wasn't it?
If you combine it with doping as well.
With Grobbelaar and... who's the other goalkeeper?
Hans Sagers, the Wimbledon goalkeeper.
Yeah, so it kind of hit the headlines quite a lot.
But
these
were just a couple of isolated incidents, weren't they?
Well, I've actually thought... The iceberg.
I've actually thought
that there are incidents where there is not official match fixing, but... where it would benefit a club to lose a match. Say, for instance, one of the big four buys Gareth Bale, goes really big for it, and goes right, £50 million for Gareth Bale. And in the contract clause, right, they say, "Oh, well, actually, what we'll do is we'll pay you £40 million, but if we win the Premier League." In the next two seasons, then we'll
give you extra money.
That will give you an extra 15 million.
Mm.
Now, if these two clubs play each other in the last weekend of the season,
mm.
when Tottenham, say, are in safely in a Europa League spot, not going to get into the Champions League, and yet this other club they've sold it to are in top position.
Mm.
They know they're going to get £15 million if they lose the game.
Mm. Yeah.
So it's like, so how far can you actually?
Yeah,
go
but I mean
in
that's
there?
That's what that's operating in self-interest.
Yeah,
that's not fixing.
Right.
That's saying, look, we're actually better. That's finding yourself in a strange position where you're better off losing a football match.
Mm.
That's not the same as somebody placing a large sum of money, you know, spread over various different markets.
Yeah.
You know, and then telling somebody to.
But you're still
behave in a different way.
The outcome of a football match for financial gain.
Yeah,
so
but stuff like that goes on quite
still,
a lot. I mean,
yeah.
there's a story of the Brighton manager, I can't remember his name now, Chris something or other, who was told to relegate his club, and he resigned because they couldn't afford to operate at the level that they were at. There's that Chappie in that non-league club who got them into the Conference South a few years ago and was sacked because he was told not to, because they couldn't afford to operate at that next level. I mean, this is clubs operating in self-interest. I don't think that's quite the same as match fixing. Match fixing is, you know, a bunch of chaps getting together and then influencing a player or a referee to behave in a certain way so that they can then place bets on it and then make a killing. Whereas I would argue that a football club that knows that a certain result will actually work out better for them despite appearances is probably just acting in self-interest. It's annoying, and you'd be very annoyed if you're putting any money on it, but, you know, that's their right. That's their, they are, they're entitled to do that. It's just when players, when managers feel weakened teamed at the end of the season because they've got a big cup final next week, and they're happy playing a team that's fighting for relegation. You know, the whole, you know, the Warnock gambit, as we like to call it. You know, you could argue that that's fixing into it to a certain extent. And, you know, maybe it is wrong, but I don't think it's quite... I don't think... it's not illegal, apart from anything
yeah,
else.
I mean, does that come under the sort of, like the broad umbrella of not playing the game how it's meant to be played?
Yeah, I think it's a violation of the spirit of the game.
Yeah.
Certainly. But it's not... I wouldn't call it match fixing.
Hmm.
But, yeah, I mean...
It's not the same level, but it's still... It's still a bit naughty.
Mm.
Yeah, I mean, that's a cultural thing. I mean, in Italy, for instance, it happens a lot, where they just simply agree, you know, that you say, look, you know, we're in the last few rounds of a fixture of the league. The games tend to be less dramatic. You don't get many dramatic ends this Serie A season because they just do that. They just agree that you say, well, actually, no, we're top of the league, and you need a point. We need a point, so we'll just play out to a draw. What do you reckon? And say, oh yeah, okay, no worries. And that's that, and that's they shake
hands. That's the way it's done, isn't it?
And it's the way it's done. Yeah. But the point is that nobody necessarily, of course, there's always the danger with something like that, is that does someone then hot foot it down to the bookies and put their money on a one-all draw? Yeah. And, you know, but I mean, that's just sort of like
I
small
think
beer,
really,
you know what I mean? That's
I think
nothing.
That's really, sorry.
No.
Yeah, I just think that's a really depressing thought that you know. You know, I would have given anything to have been a footballer when I was a kid.
Yeah.
Not when I was a kid, but, you know, when I grew up.
Yeah.
But, it was all about wanting to win and be the best you can be. And if it just turns out to be convenient for somebody's balance sheet, that is not just against the spirit of the game. You might as well just pack it up and
but
go away.
This won't be happening every week yet. This will be probably just happening in certain instances. I mean, Graham's scenario that he went out there was an unlikely scenario.
Very, very unlikely.
But, you know, you've both brought me right down, and I feel a bit low.
Oh, man.
This is turning to a recurring theme on the Sound of Football podcast. So.
What, bringing Bilton down?
Yeah. What we're going to have to do is we're going to have to like drug him up next time.
You've got some blood bags up there.
See, there you go, look. Yeah. Cheered up already.
With the name.
There was something in that thing.
Yeah.
You said it was a food supplement.
They're all up in Sibley's closet, and they're all got names on them, labelled with prominent Premier League. You just choose the one you want to be, and then we'll
we'll just hook you up.
Next week I can't come to the Sound of Football because I'm going to be playing for AC Milan. Once I've had this bag of blood.
No AC Milan players are guilty of taking drugs.
Well, on that happy note, it's time to draw a close to this week's podcast. We hope you've enjoyed this eye-opening expose into drunken football.
this exercise in a hopeless speculation.
Hey, we came up with a lot more stuff than Panorama did.
Well, it's not difficult.
So
the next week we're going to go and find the Ukrainians to accuse of being hooligans.
Oh, yeah, that's easy. So from me, Graham Sibley, and from Terry and Jan, until next week, it's goodbye.
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 You can contact us through our website, sofpodcast.com, via Twitter, @soundoffootball, or on facebook.com/soundoffootball.
Come on, Terry, we haven't got all day. Just pee in the tube.
You know I can't do it when you're watching me.